This is Robert Stark. I am joined here today with Alexander Dugan. Mr. Dugan, it is great having you on the show.
Thank you. Hello.
So we're going to be discussing a number of topics. Your book, Fourth Political Theory, your views on geopolitics involving Russia, your recent comments on the U.S. election. But first of all, before we get to that, can you sort of give our audience some brief biographical information about you? You were involved with some different political movements while Russia was still part of the Soviet Union in the 1980s.
First of all, I was dissident in the Soviet time, but I was anti-communist. But I wasn't dissident on the liberal or leftist or anarchist spectrum, but rather traditionalist. So I was the partisan defender of the traditional values. So my world vision was formed with ideas of conservative philosophers of Tsarist Russia, as well as conservative philosophers of the West. So that was the core of my my position. I was against communism. I am and I was against the modernity and against this Western turn of enlightenment that I considered a kind of the fall of the West and the fall of the Christian traditional society. So I am traditionalist and a follower of René Guénon, and after enduring perestroika and in the first years of the 90s, I was involved in different conservative patriotic movements in Russia that were anti-communist, as well anti-liberal, anti-Western. So that was a kind of traditionalist conservative orientation. I participate in different movements and organizations, but always my position was very, very clear. I was partisan of revival of the Russian traditional identity. I am defender of the idea of Russian Empire as a kind of traditional society. I'm anti-liberal, and I was always anti-liberal because I consider liberalism as the essence of the modernity, and I reject the modernity. In the 80s, I was anti-Soviet dissident. In the 90s, I was anti-Yeltsin, anti-liberal, anti-pro-Western government. So
what were some of the biggest observations you've noticed during those changes from communism to the Yeltsin regime?
My idea was, because I was against both, I was and I am against communism as well against liberalism. So this passage, the change was very big and huge, but I was dissident in the Soviet time, in the totalitarian time, and I became the member of patriotic opposition in the liberal time. So to be dissident, to be deprived of any possibility to express disagreement and opposition concern that you don't share the mainstream line of the situation. I was anti-communist dissident, and I was radical patriotic opposition during the Yeltsin era. But with the coming to the power of President Putin, always conserving the same, completely the same core of the basic ideas, I became the supporter of Putin, because that was the third form of ideological tendency, not communist, not liberal. So I was more or less happy with that, because that was patriotic. Putin tried to restore up to the certain point Christian attitudes toward the values. He tried to restore the sovereignty of the Russia as a great state, and that corresponded roughly with ideas that I defended before him. So many things changed during these 30 or 35 years when I'm participating actively in Russian politics, from dissidents through the opposition to the support of the government. And the reason is of the changes of my attitudes toward government is not the difference, the change of my position, but the change of the government, because it was communist, after that it was liberal, and with Putin it is more patriotic. So the core of my idea is the same from the 80s up to today, up to present time. But the regime underwent very important changes. So it could seem that I have changed very much my position, my attitude toward government, toward the state, toward ideology, but in the fact it's rather the opposite. There's the ideology, dominating ideology has changed during these years, and my position is always the same.
There was an article from Foreign Affairs magazine, which is from the Council of Foreign Relations. They're a major like globalist think tank in the United States. Their article was titled Putin's Brain, and they made the claim that you're a major advisor and influence on Putin. How well do you know Putin personally, and have your ideas influenced him?
I'd prefer not to respond to such kind of questions.
Okay.
By some different reasons. So I instead I propose, I invite to consider better, for example, my views expressed during 90s and early 2000s, in order to understand in what points the politic of Mr. Putin coincides with my views, and at which point we disagree. Because I am following the strict line of ideological discourse. So I am traditionalist, conservative. I am against the modernity. I am defender of Renaissance, rebirth of the Russian traditional society. So that is my firm and consequent position during all the changes. But we could remark many coincidences between my ideological platform or position and some concrete political and geopolitical steps performed by Mr. Putin. Well, there are so many coincidences that observers from outside come to the conclusion of the close cooperation between us. But I would like not to clear this point by different reasons. But for me, what is much more important than personal relations or influence or position, it is a kind of ideological coherence of the ideas on one side, and the realization or application of some geopolitical or ideological principles to the concrete reality. If we judge these coincidences, you could arrive, you could make your own conclusion at what point these two reality, intellectual or ideological one, and geopolitical or political one, coincide or not. That depends on the position of kind of the point of observation, because the position in the politics as well as in the quantum mechanic, the position of observer is very, very important. If you observe some process in geopolitics or in politics or in the ideology from one point, you arrive at one type of conclusions. If you start from different point of observation, you arrive at completely different set of conclusions. All depends on the concrete situation and as well ideological and political engagement of the analyst.
One trend that I've noticed is during the Cold War, the relationship between Russia and the United States, there was a sense of unity in America. Americans were brought together and they were told that Russia was the enemy and that united Americans, and I'm sure the same was true in Russia. But what's happening today is very interesting because you kind of see these back and forth proxy wars in a sense, where on one hand you have the American establishment, you have individuals like George Soros backing liberal movements in Russia, but on the other hand you have a news network like Russia Today, which is basically, it's the Russian government's English network, and they provide a voice for a lot of American political dissidents. Russia gave refugee status to Edward Snowden, and you see back and forth. So the battle right now isn't so much Russia versus the United States, but it's more of a battle of principle and ideas. What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, I consider the Cold War and confrontation between two ideological camps as and one of many possible manifestation of geopolitical dualism. So I think that the differences between...
I agree completely that about the Cold War. The point I was making is more how the people were conditioned to think, and how the way people are reacting to things is starting to change.
I think that only the external form of this confrontation between geopolitics of the sea power and land power has completely changed. But the essence, but the most important and profound aspect of this opposition rests, because it's much deeper than political or including ideological confrontation. And I think that we have two kind of civilization. Civilization of the merchant, of the market, of Carthago type. It is represented clearly by United States, and there is the Roman form of Third Rome. Moscow is called Third Rome. Roman form of civilization, more traditional, sacred, and based on the force rather than on the money. And I think that there are two kinds. There is as well geopolitical dissidence. For example, I think that Americans that share tellurocratic values, for example, tradition, sacred, Christianity, heroic past of European ancestors, they represent a kind of geopolitical dissidence in this actual ultra-liberal, purely bourgeois America. So they are in some up to the certain point, they are as well representatives of the land power in America, and as well in Russia we have our proper dissident, geopolitical dissidents, that share, for example, liberal sea power values. For example, free market, infinite growth of the richness of and so on. And what is interesting, so George Soros, that you have mentioned in your speech, he is representative of this kind of pure Atlanticism, of pure sea power. So, and as long as I know, Soros represents only part of American identity. He is not American. He is Hungarian Jew. But what is interesting, he is absolutely representative for this spirit, for this sea power, for this merchant civilization, where the money and the liberalization of all kind of traditional borders of the human behavior is manifested. So Soros is pure spirit of the sea power, and I agree. In America, there are many, many, I think, millions of the people who share rather land power values. The people that is traditional, very conserving identity and the heritage, European or African or Indian, that is not so much important, but heritage, tradition, and identity. So I think that there is a kind of geopolitical dualism that is not only the confrontation of two hegemonies, of two great states, for example, Russia and United States, but as well, there is a kind of inner war, inner problem of our societies, because we have our geopolitical dissidents that reject our Russian traditional Christian land power identity as well. I think there is differences, deep differences between the American population that is more or less traditional and conservative, and there is as well political elite that represents the pure spirit of the sea power. So we have as well this problem not only of the confrontation between two states, but as well and more deeper confrontation of two types of the mentality. And I think, but as well as your elite, American elite, is completely sea power, completely Carthago elite as well, the majority of actual Russian elite is of the same type. It is oligarchy, liberal, free market, and so on. But our society, our people, Russian people, is much more conservative. And now we have on one side our Russian people with its tellurocratic land power identity, and President Putin that is more or less on the same side. And we have political pro-Western, liberal, oligarchical elite that is pro-American and very close to Soros, George Soros mentality as well. You have your own elite, but that is completely sovereign, and that doesn't let the representative of real American people to step in this elite, because it is colonial elite, and that elite that now is hijacked America, and this ultra-liberal sea power elite that wasn't presented in the origin of American society, and this elite was formed only during 20th century, imitating Great Britain, and this elite has taken in, as a hostage American people. And I think, I presume, I hope, maybe I am wrong, you should correct me, that the majority of American society is rather conservative, Christian, traditional, or are very good people, but this society has not correct representation in the elite that follows its own goal and its our tasks that doesn't that don't correspond to what real concrete American man or woman want.
So you recently made some comments in praise of a Donald Trump and your take on the American elections, and this actually got coverage in some major American news outlets. You made an interesting point about Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. You said something that the American people is to the right of Donald Trump and to the left of Bernie Sanders at the same time. First of all, what is your personal take on Donald Trump, and can you explain what you mean by that statement?
I think that Donald Trump, instead of being very rich man and tycoon, he is rather not elitist type. I think he is popular, he is populist, he is normal American. So he is not the member of this sect, globalist sect that rules America. And that is a kind of hope for not only for us, for Russians, but as well for all other humanity and for American people. I don't think that Trump will win. It would be too beautiful if Trump wins the elections. But I think he's very, very characteristic with the state of the spirit in present American society. So Donald Trump is populist. So he expresses what the middle American, more or less normal American, thinks. So he tried to break the consensus of the elite, political correctness. He speaks the popular language, the language of the American society, and not of this sect of globalists that try to implement their own agenda. So that is a chance. The real chance and the possibility of real change is not Obama, not to say about Hillary Clinton or Ted Cruz or Rubio. Everybody here are completely conventional. They are completely completely in the same frame of these globalist sects. But Donald Trump represents the people, and that is the reason why I am very glad that there is such person. He already has made so different changes in the image of United States abroad and inside that I think he already has fulfilled his mission. He has shown alternative, the popular alternative to the rule of these globalist sect that hijacked United States from some time. And I think that he represents a kind of sane America. Maybe not so brilliant, but maybe he has some exaggerated features in his personality, but it is completely understandable, recognizable features of American society. He is as sympathetic as real America is. So if you don't like America, you don't like Donald Trump. But for example, Hillary Clinton or Cruz or Rubio, they represent American elite. So they are completely of different race, I would say. The race of the people that follow some kind of agenda that has nothing in common with American people and American mentality. So that is why I observe Donald Trump with sympathy and as well with growing sociological interest, because for me, I am doctor of sociology, it is as well very, very representative for the state of mind and all the structure of and the changes in American society. He is very interesting sociological case.
So you had a book out, this is your most recent book, called The Fourth Political Theory. And the first two are fascism and communism, the third is liberalism, and the fourth is your idea of a fourth political theory. First of all, what are your thoughts on communism and fascism? What are the key motivations to why fascism, communism arise and why people supported them? And what do you see as their biggest flaws?
First of all, I would like to correct a little bit, because the first political theory that appeared first was liberalism, and that is last. It's the first and the last. So it is the first political theory, liberalism. The second political theory is communism, and the third, chronologically, political theory is fascism or national socialism. And first of all, liberalism, for me, is political essence of the modernity, of the enlightenment. That is individualism, materialism, progressism, linear time, and absolute absence of the sacred, of the spiritual interests of the life. That is a kind of antisocial concept of the man. The man is the highest being. So it is a kind of divinization of the man that is the basis of the liberalism. So I think that that represents the evil. Liberalism is Satanism, is political metaphysical Satanism that destroys tradition, that completely refuse any sacred and spiritual understanding of the society, of the life, and so on. And communism and fascism were two reactions against liberalism, but they were completely permitted. They were infused by the virus of modernity, so that were two efforts to win liberalism by the same means, starting from the same basis, from modern concept of class, or as well modern and completely artificial concept of race in the case of National Socialism. So all these three political theory, the first and the most dangerous, liberalism, and two reactions against liberalism that were not coherent. They didn't touch the real essence of what they struggled against. So they didn't understand the real nature of liberalism, and they have proposed the false alternative based on the same spirit they pretended to struggle. So they are insufficient, communism and fascism, and they are too modern to be real alternative to the liberalism. So that is the core of my analysis, that in order to win liberalism, we need to imagine something different than communism and fascism, because they were limited by their modernist prejudices, and they have lost their battle not only on the material level, so that was a kind of the fall of Third Reich and fascist Italy, and as well the fall of Soviet Union and 1991. But what is much more important, they have lost their battle metaphysically, because in order to oppose liberalism, some coherent strategy, ideological strategy, we need attack the essence of liberalism, that is modernity, that is individualism, that is a kind of the materialism, the linear time, and the universalism of the modern, post-medieval, Anglo-Saxon type of anthropology. So I think that we need to be anti-liberal, but not to be communist or fascist. It's very, very difficult to understand and accept for liberals, because everybody who is anti-liberal in the eyes of liberal is or communist or fascist. So they couldn't imagine this fourth political theory, how it is possible to be anti-liberal, not being fascist or communist. But they should should accept finally once this position, because I tried to explain in my books and my different articles and interviews and the texts and the programs, what is it fourth political theory? And that is very important point. When, for example, the people as Glenn Beck or other American analytics from liberal or right or from the left, they try to call me or communist or fascist or communist and fascist at the same time, they simply show their incapacity to speak directly with the argument. They try to neglect the fourth political theory. They try to avoid to answer the arguments that I'm developing, and that is a kind of the very simplest and very stupid strategy of blackening of the opponent instead of entering with him in the normal and coherent and correct polemic.
And the tactic that liberals would use to divide people and to prevent opposition is the left side of liberalism will attack anyone who is politically incorrect or who is in opposition to things like mass immigration as a fascist. Then on the other side, the right wing of liberalism will attack anyone who takes anti-plutocracy stances or anti-banker stances as a communist.
Correct. That is correct. Now we have a kind of new form of totalitarianism. We had two previously. We had two forms of totalitarianism: communist and fascist. First was communist, and the second fascist. But now we have third form of totalitarianism. This time it is liberal totalitarianism. And now the liberal they give us the possibility, the liberty to be anyone or what we want except anti-liberal. So they could accept us only as liberal. We are freedom to be liberals, but we are not free to not to be liberal. That's very, very, very smart idea. So you could choose inside of liberalism, right position to be the partisan of the market economy and so on, or you could be left liberal, so defending gay marriages, you could, and so on. You could be far right liberal if you are as well for market, absolutely free market, you are far right liberal, or you could be anarchist, far left liberal. But you should be absolutely liberal. So that is very funny situation when the new form of totalitarianism, new form of the propaganda of persecution for the opinion, the policy of thinking is this time it is liberal weapon. So now we all, everybody of us, we are living in the concentration camp where the liberals are instead of NKVD or Gestapo. Now we are living under the control of liberals that try to impose on humanity, all humanity, their norms and their rules of the behavior. And that is not only suggestion, not only moral code of behavior, it is a kind of rule. If you refuse liberalism, so you are public enemy with all the consequences. So you are regarded as extremist and so on, and so you are deprived soon of your liberty. So that is a kind of liberal concentration camp. It could sound paradoxical, but it is the reality. And in order to free ourselves from this third form of liberalism, we need to propose something other than a previous totalitarian system. We should avoid absolutely to be communist or to be fascist, because we don't need to oppose to this kind of liberal totalitarianism the other previous forms of totalitarianism. We should oppose to the liberal totalitarianism the real liberty, the real freedom that should be based on the multiplicity or multiple understanding of human nature that depends from the kind of civilization. If we accept this pluralistic understanding of anthropology, of human nature, if we agree that different civilization, American, Russian, Indian, Islamic, European, African, Chinese, and so on, can have its own values, its own civilizational principles, and could have its own understanding of human, of time, of space, of history, of God, of nature, then we could arrive to the real liberty and real dialogue. But
and what liberals have been saying is they claim to be for individual freedom, but what happens in the long run is this sort of liberalism or radical individualism is it leads to people being dramatically atomized, where they're not connected to any sense of a group or community. So that leads to people being completely at the mercy of these big institutions like government, multinational corporations, banks. And it leads to people where if they have the wrong views, they're excluded from polite discourse. So in the long run, that kind of radical individualism may seem like freedom in the short run, but in the long run, it leads to a
exactly,
far more
exactly.
totalitarian but society.
But what is as well of importance that if, for example, in the Western societies, there is a kind of historical basis to regard the human, the man, the human being and individual as more or less the same, but if we come to the other societies, for Russia, if we are coming to Russian society, to Islamic society, to Indian society, we immediately arrive at the conclusion that there is the other type of anthropology. So for Russian to be man, it is to be the part of the people, of the church, of the society. So if you aren't the part on something that is greater than you, you don't exist, and you could not have any right because you are deprived. You are refused to have the most important right of participation. This participation forms for us, for Russians, our identity. We are human, and the measure that we are involved, we are included in the collective, in the society. We have holistic understanding of the human nature. So for us, to be human is to participate. And for us, the individual freedom is a kind of contradiction in itself. This kind of freedom has no subject because we have no positive concept of ontology, of being of individual. Maybe for the some Western society, this atomization is good. Maybe you have such a thing as the individual subject that enjoys its freedom. But maybe not. It is
whether what happened in American history is back in, say, like the 1960s, is people sort of were starting to get exposed to this sort of radical individualism, but at the same sense, they still had a remnant of a more traditional society. So I think at first things maybe could have worked, but now we've gone to kind of the extreme end game of liberalism, and the extreme end game of liberalism is very much not very much totalitarianism.
Absolutely. So first of all, maybe that was a kind of process, because in the beginning of these liberal philosophy was Anglo-Protestant idea of individual salvation and the search of the condition to be more free from the traditional limitation of European and British society. But after that, this liberal idea developed in the kind of absolutization of the individuality. The principle of individuality was brought to its utmost form, and that was a kind that was liberation from first of all Catholic Church in favor of the Protestant concept of individual faith. After that was a kind of liberation from the national statehood or ethnic groups or the traditional hierarchical society. After that was a liberation of the individual from the sexual identity. Now we are here in this stage of liberalism, and tomorrow the last stage and the phase of liberalism will signify the liberation of the individual from the collective identity with other humans. So that will be post-human individualism. So idea to create now some post-human species, the species semi-man, semi-cyborg, improved chimeras or improved human being with technical apparatus and advices that could improve the quality and of performance of human organs. All that is the logical step and logical conclusion of this liberalism. Liberalism leads to transhumanism, to the liberation of individual from any kind of collective identity, starting from the Catholic Church, traditional society, after that liberation from the nationality, from ethnic race, and today liberation from sexual identity, and tomorrow that will be liberation from belongingness to the humankind. So that will signify the logical end of the humanity and the beginning of the post-human time. But in origin all that was a kind of Protestant spirit that maybe the previous forms now could of Protestantism could be regarded as a kind of conservative. They don't want to go further in this process, and now they could be as well allies of our anti-modern and anti-individualist struggle. But all this line, all this logical consequence is clear from philosophical point of view, starting from the Protestant individualism in faith and the Christian tradition. We little by little we are arriving to the post-human and transhuman form of glorification of the pure individualism that logically should refuse any form of collective identity, including collective identity with other humans.
So when you talk about a fourth political theory, do you mean going back to the way things were prior to liberalism, or do you mean creating something that's completely new that hasn't been done yet?
I think that we need to rethink postmodernity. I think that postmodernity is very, very serious challenge for the modern way of thinking. But I think that the majority of the postmodern thinkers, they regard by inertia, philosophical inertia, the postmodernity as continuation or maybe last stage of the modernity. If we arrive to understand the postmodernity as the real end of the modernity and real overcoming of the structure of the modernity, so we could rediscover pre-modernity. So, for example, I think that postmodernity could be or modern or pre-modern, but in both senses it will be not anymore modern in the sense that we know that. So the modern postmodernity is ultra-liberalist liberalism. So that is something that is Tarantino films, that is fragmentation, rhizomatic fragmentation of the modern man in order to create a kind of chaotic post-human entity instead of him.
The other thing about liberalism is it would be one thing if people would just contain their values and ideas to their own countries and cities, but to kind of use a term coined by leftists is a cultural imperialism. Liberalism is imperialistic because they want to impose their values not just on their own countries, but basically on the entire world. A good example of that would be Russia. Russia doesn't share the same values as the United States, so this country is a bad country, and we need to be antagonistic towards them because they don't share all our liberal values.
That is a kind of tradition, very, very traditional ethnocentrism, and liberals are ethnocentric, and European are ethnocentric. They regard any kind of ethnocentrism is inclined to think that their society represent universal type and normative type of society, and all others are kind of degenerated form of the same society. So that is ethnocentric vision that is common to the liberals, but I think that is common as well to the communists and that any kind of to religions as well. But I think that fourth political theory should be based on the unification of two different forms, postmodernity and pre-modernity. So fourth political theory should criticize, is based on the critics of the universalism that you have mentioned, but as not on the leftist, in the leftist vision that, for example, liberals are imperialist, but communists as well are very imperialist. Communism regards the universal version of history, and they affirm that every society should follow the same path. And we traditionalists, we refuse this universalism. So fourth political theory as pluralistic and multipolar in its essence, and that is why it could not be not liberal, not communist, not racist in the more drastic form as National Socialism. We are anti-racist and anti-ethnocentrist in any form. So defending Russian identity, we don't like to discriminate the identities of the other, and we recognize the right of every people and every culture to have its own identity, but we don't recognize the right to impose identity of one people on the other people, of one society on other society.
I want to get your thoughts on immigration and multiculturalism. There is a kind of, the view among sort of mainstream right-wingers is that multiculturalism is foreign culture, taking over American culture. What basically happens is when, mass immigration comes in from either in the United States or Western Europe, these people, they don't assimilate into European culture or traditional American culture, but at the same time, they also lose their own traditional culture as well. So that sort of leaves a massive cultural void.
The immigration is up to a certain point a natural phenomenon. And it existed always, and any society, every society had its own ways to treat, to deal with the immigration. And in the majority of cases, that was assimilation or integration politics and the methods and the rules how to integrate immigrants. And that was sometimes difficult, sometimes easy, but always there were rules. As well, an American melting pot in the country based on immigrational process that there existed up to certain moment, the kinds of rule how to integrate everybody, every immigrants inside of the society. For example, Chinese or Russians or Jews or Indian coming to United States, they were obliged to accept some forms up to the certain point of WASP identity, white Anglo-Saxon identity taken for a kind of norm. And that was a kind of very broad norm, but norm nevertheless. And in the last decades, I think that this norm was dissolved, was destroyed. And now, when the immigrants are coming to Europe, or to United States, or to any other country as well, because there is mass immigration in the countries as India and Japan and other points of the world. And when they come, the immigrants don't receive this norm. They have no idea how to be similar to the people living there. So that is multiculturalism, and it is based on the liberal idea of the human right, because human right is a kind of liberal ideology that that affirms as a kind of law, as a kind of axiom, that a human being is individual. So if it is individual, let him to be free completely from any kind of social norms or imposing rules. So he is completely free to be what he wants. And that destroys completely and consciously destroys the any possibility of the integration or assimilation. So immigrants are not integrated. They are not rejected, and they are not accepted by the society. That's create a kind of alienation, total alienation of everybody, of the people who came, the people who live here for centuries. Everybody is alienated from everybody, because individualism and liberalism is the same as alienation, is the alienation itself. And I think that mass migration is as well a kind of conscious strategy of liberal sect, globalist sect, the people, as Soros say it clearly, that they favor mass immigration in order to destroy traditional links inside of society, to destroy society as such. And I think that is conscious strategy, and this is ideological idea. Mass migration, as it exists today with multiculturalism, it is conscious strategy in order to destroy completely the society by the liberal globalist sect ruling the Western country and trying to rule as well the other countries. So I think it is not only the problem, it is a kind of the destiny. It is it is something as you are doomed on immigration. Immigration is a kind of catastrophe, but not natural catastrophe, but planned, socially organized catastrophe. And you could not struggle against that because you could not to impose on immigrants any kind, any form of integration or assimilation strategy. Liberals strictly prohibit that. And if so, the alienation will grow, the multiculturalism will create more and more confrontation inside of society that is not, glory to God, the same as liberal imagined it. So I think that the sane form, normal form of life, still exists in the West, in the United States, and we will have the war, the everybody against everybody, because the liberals, they are leading the societies to this end. I'm absolutely sure, because they are acting not by the, because they are stupid, but they are following the other form of rationality, liberal rationality, based on the necessity of absolutization of individuals. And mass migration is the kind of planned strategy.
So then you get a nationalism, and nationalism often can be based on conflict. Ideally, you would have different nations and groups of people coexisting and working together to kind of resist globalism. But at the same time, I think, like, look at Europe, for instance, because of the massive migrant crisis, I think it is inevitable that there will be a massive conflict with Islam within Europe. So what are your thoughts on nationalism and whether nationalism is based on conflict, and can you have nationalism without conflict?
Nationalism is modern idea, as well as class, society, or race, or individual. All these concepts are completely modern, and if you try to create a national state, you inevitably, immediately, you will have the minority that will be oppressed, and so on and so on. You put free this minority, they will create the new national state where there will be new kind of minority, and this, it is up to the infinity. I think that nationalism isn't solution. I could clearly, easily understand nationalist reaction against mass migration, liberalism and individualism and multiculturalism, and that is a kind of reaction. And reaction of the sane animal, but against the virus, against the catastrophe that is approaching. But it is not solution. We could not cure the problem with something that is as well problematic and that belongs to the same frame, theoretical and ideological frame. So, in order to overcome, to resolve the situation with mass migration, nationalism is not enough. Nationalism is modern idea, and it is completely artificial. We need to, the only solution I see in the return to the traditional sacred society. Because traditional society wasn't national one. Nationalism is modern. It is an enlightenment idea. We need to return to the traditional hierarchical society with the sacred spiritual meaning in center of it. So this society will have very strong identity. In any migrant process, any immigrants will be obliged to accept it or go out. So, to be integrated in this traditional society, accepting its rules, norms, values, and trying to be embedded in this structure, social structure, or it will be, it will put aside. So that is clear. It is not a kind of only legislation that should prevent mass migration, but first of all, we need new kind of society. In the modern society, immigration, it is unstoppable in theory. So I need to go now. I would like to say goodbye to everybody who has heard us. So best wishes to American auditory, American listeners, and American people that I personally like very much.
Alexander Dugin, it's been a great show. Thanks for being on.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.